Hello, everyone. My name is Kevin England, and this is the Beekeeper's Corner podcast. April 28th, 2010. Welcome to the kickoff episode, episode number one. Actually, this is episode 1.4, so to speak. I made an attempt to get this podcast up and running last year, but the podcast was, as they say, overtaken by events. And I was serving as president of our local soccer organization here in New Jersey, and there just wasn't enough time in the day to serve two masters. I suppose as I look around, well, things aren't that much different this year, and I'm still serving the role, but pure stubborn passion for wanting to do this is why I'm sitting here today, and very determined to make this work. I guess before I get ahead of myself here, let me do a little bit of setup for the podcast. I have a primer episode on our website, and that will help everyone get up to speed down the road if they come and join us, but for now, this being the first episode, some of the data that is included in there bears repeating here to level set everyone on the direction of the podcast, since this is the maiden voyage. Where to start? Best place to stay to start is always at the beginning, and this is the beginning of our third year for beekeeping for our household, and I would say we've had mixed results over the last two seasons. As it stands right now, we lost our bees over the winter, and we're actually going beeless into the 2010 spring season. We're not fretting, though, as we have a few packages on order and expect to get that situation resolved in the next 2 weeks or so, but more on that in a moment. My wife Sharon is the one who got us into this a few years ago, and we consider ourselves hobby beekeepers, or as it's often referred to these days, backyard beekeepers. We plan on maintaining around 2 to 4 hives on our property here in central New Jersey. I did an interview with Sharon for the original first episode, and even though it has references to last year, I'm going to insert that here a little bit later if you'll allow me the indulgence, as it will give a little bit of the backstory on our entry into the world of beekeeping. I have in mind to bring you our story and catch you up, so to speak, to the current situation, but before I get ahead of myself, let me share, as I said before, some housekeeping items. My hope and desire is to bring you a weekly podcast, but with my work schedule, that might stretch out to be a 2-week period on occasion, but it shouldn't be any longer than that. You, the listeners, can hold me to that for sure. The website for the show is www.bkcorner.org. There you can find information and subscribe to the podcast, and over time I'll get to submitting it to iTunes and the Zune Marketplace for those who get their podcasts that way. At the website, you can find contact information to send us a note, and I'll be sure to share that at the end of each episode. In case you want to jot it off now, I can be reached at kevin@bkcorner.org. As I mentioned earlier, I provided a primer episode that goes a little bit more into what we intend to cover here on the episodes, and that's available at the website. I have an interest in media, so I'll try along the way to share some details about the process of creating a podcast, in case that interests you. As far as content is concerned, I'm hoping to bring you some insight on beekeeping by sharing and having you follow along with what we have going on with the hives that we'll maintain. Where possible, we'll share some Beekeepers Association news from our local organization, and later this summer we'll bring some coverage of our local county fairs and the activities that go on there, bringing beekeeping to the public. That's enough housekeeping. Let me spend a few minutes bringing you up to speed on what happened with our local hives. We'll be back in just a moment. Last year was our second year of beekeeping, and we started the year with a really strong hive. Plenty of brood, strong queen, everything went really well. We went through the season, and we had ordered two new nukes. We were going to put together three hives. We got those really late, but For those who live in the Northeast, you probably know the story. It rained quite a bit in May, and I think it rained the first 20-something days in June. And we started our colonies really soft. They came late, the packages, and by the time the bees got situated in the hives and it stopped raining, anything that resembled pollen, nectar, whatever, for the spring flow was pretty much gone. It wasn't a very good summer, and we knew that the two new hives that we started last year were in trouble. We worked through the season. We fed them all the way through. We made sure we dusted them with sugar, kept the mites down, kept the mite load in check. And, you know, the bees started to grow in size. And we even got to the point where we were able to put a second box up on the top. But in the end, the one strong hive looked great come August time frame. The other two hives looked really weak and were very doubtful as to get through the winter time. Did a check on them somewhere about late August, and then soccer season kicked in. It was tournament time and so on, and running the organization coming to a close became a challenge, and we just didn't get out to them as much as possible. It come about mid-September, it probably was about 2 weeks or so after school started, we went back out to check on the hives, and totally disappointed to find our really good hive was decimated. Apparently, the last time we checked, it had plenty of brood. It had a ton of pollen. It had honey in it stacked all the way. It was good to go into winter. And come to find out that it must have went queenless just moments after we did it. It was 2 years old. I guess the queen gave up the ghost, and whatever the case may be, by the time we went out and checked it, it was, I want to say September 16th or 20th or something. It was completely gone. All the honey had been robbed. No bees existed. There were yellow jackets and whatever in there, and just totally written off. We were so disappointed to come and find that. And actually, we had pulled a medium super up off the top and got to harvest some honey. That's how strong the hive was going into the year. But wow, what a huge blow that was for us. So looking at the other two hives, they were extremely questionable. We went and sought some advice. Best thing we were told to do was just feed the bees best we could. They got a really terrible start because of all the rain in May and June here in the Northeast. And we ended up late in the season making the decision to see if we can combine the two hives. We followed the instructions someone gave us where we took all the honey that we had, put it in a top super. We put the two hives together separated by newspaper, poked a hole in it, and hoped that perhaps the two of them would come together and form enough of a cluster to provide a reasonable amount of heat to get them through the winter. But went out and checked it. They seemed to come together, but it looked like almost like a huge struggle. A lot of bees were lost, and in the end, the hive just did not make it through the winter. We went out and checked it sometime around December time frame, and basically it looked like the hive had starved. And we went from three to no hives within the span of 2 months, and a pretty disappointing year for beekeeping. But as we went to the spring meeting recently and talked around, a lot of people lost their bees this year for varying reasons. Varroa apparently having its impact around here in the New Jersey area, even though everybody was taking measures to do it. But really, a lot of people trace it back to the effect of the springtime here in New Jersey and the amount of rain that we have. So undaunted, went to the spring meetings, participated with our fellow beekeepers. Several of them are doing pretty well and have their hives up and running. It seems like this is going to be a really strong spring for bringing up colonies. And had the fortune, we've not been able to find anybody that can get us some bees here. And at the bee meeting this past weekend, we were able to order a couple nukes, and we're expecting them in sometime about first or second week in May, which is great considering what we went through last year. So it seems we're at the perfect time to get the podcast up and running in 2010, as we're going to have new bees, and we can take you through the year and bring you a blow-by-blow of what's going to happen here. So for now, I'm going to take a break. Coming up, I'll let you know what took place at our local Beekeepers Association meeting that took place this past weekend, and we have that interview with Sharon coming up after that.
go with the candy on up. You can take a frame out now. You should see her in there. Just be careful now. We don't want to kill her or crush her, but you should see a blue dot somewhere in there.
It's blue and she's large.
She's an inch and a quarter large. You are correct.
You saw him already?
You got her?
No.
Yeah. Probably on that frame.
Those are about three signs you can tell us right here. One. How to find queen bee. All right.
There's
a blue dot on queen.
Oh, she ain't flying.
She's very large. She's even larger.
A lot of bees on this one.
Like
oh, look what we got.
There she is.
I see a blue dot, don't you?
Yeah.
See the queen's court circle around her? She's a circle.
She's on the far end of the frame. He'll see.
Why are
they
always heads are always toward the
queen?
He'll show you. And she's very large in her standard
lobby. I saw the blue dot.
That's her mother. That's all her daughter. Yeah. Want to get your picture?
Oh, I see a blue dot.
So we know we have a queen.
And the queen is just a girl.
Yeah. Settle down in a couple days and she'll be laying down there. She's already made it. It's a good color this year, blue. I can see them real good. Imagine good soup.
The audio you're listening to is Stan Wazatowski, one of our members, pulling a frame from one of the club hives and showing everyone that the queen was in there after installing a package of bees. Each spring we take the time to install a package or two in the club hives to share the experience with the members, and every time you experience it, it's kind of certainly a wonder, I would say. It's almost like a rite of passage to stand there with friends and people who share the same interest as you amongst the bees flying after an installation and take in the wonder of the start of a new hive. Maybe waxing a little poetically, but this past weekend's meeting started out at our common meeting point, Echo Hill Park, which is off of Route 31 near Route 78 or Interstate 78 near Clinton, New Jersey. About 30 beekeepers, young and old, gathered to share their stories of how the bees fared over the winter and what's taking shape for the spring. Our group is the Northwest branch of the New Jersey Beekeepers Association, and we maintain a Yahoo group where a lot of us post questions, talk about conditions on hives and whatever, beekeeping, but there's nothing like coming together in person and enjoying that experience. Scott Hornsall, the club president, Charlie Isley Jr., Stan Wazatowski, Roger Garris, and others, longtime members, took the time to contribute to the meeting, talking to everyone about getting started, if that's the case, or answering questions about challenges, even for the seasoned beekeepers. Always a good conversation. The audience in attendance ranges from seasoned beekeepers to the brand new beekeepers awaiting their first delivery. We, meaning our family, are noted as somewhere in the middle of the mix. We've been doing this for just a few years, and it's always an interesting mix of questions and commentary from those in attendance. The meetings are a wealth of information. Sometimes you center on things that you've heard many times before, and it's good reinforcement to hear it again, but there's always the occasion where something new is learned, and for that reason, I always bring a notepad and often use my phone to record what's going on in the conversations. Given it was the spring meeting, the early topics included reminders that the bees move up as a rule and that they might be feeling crowded if you left them in there in the top box. Typically what you have coming out of winter in New Jersey is a two-stack box. And so in the spring, it's a reasonable action to pull the populated box from the top, switch it to the bottom, and put that top one, or the bottom one up to the top as it provides a sense of room to grow for the bees. It's not a fail-safe for keeping a swarm from occurring, but many beekeepers believe in this practice as bees tend to move up, and if they have room upstairs, they usually stay put. In addition to swapping the boxes, it's time to assess how your queen is doing, and Charlie Isley shared that now is the time to make sure your hives are queen right, and that your brood patterns are at least 5 to 6 frames in a 10-frame box. By the way, I'll take a time every once in a while to explain a thing. Brood, for those new to beekeeping, means the area of the hive where the bees are being cared for when in the egg, larvae, or pupa stages. You'll literally see eggs, larvae, or capped brood inside on the frames, which looks like comb that has a chocolate cover seal over it. If you haven't seen the right brood patterns in your box here early spring, it's time to consider getting a new queen for your hive. You want to make sure that they can grow enough bees here in the spring to get through the season and have a strong hive to overwinter later this year. You know, during the conversation, I picked up a point that supersedures, where one queen replaces another, take place over a period of time. I guess I always thought that they'd go in and do off the old queen and make the new one just do whatever they're going to do, but as it was described, the hive will allow the old queen to operate while the new one gets situated. They're ensuring that the queen is basically going to work out. I didn't consider how this works and always thought that it was quick. Never considered that they might be both in operation for a while. And here's one of those times when you learn something or get a new take on how things work. So always enjoy these meetings. There was a lively discussion about feeders and what the preferences were. An internal frame feeder was pulled out and a question was answered concerning bees drowning. The first iteration of these feeders had a hole where you poured the sugar solution in. 1:1 sugar and water, by the way, a common question. People always say, well, how do you mix your sugar solution? 1:1 sugar and water. Guess everybody does it differently depending on what's what, but you'll find them a little ADD sometimes. Keep going here. What happened with those feeders in the beginning was you found a lot of drowned bees. They came out with the improved design, say version 2.0, where a mesh type structure was built into the hole so the bees could use it like a ladder and walk down to the liquid. Some even commented that they throw a cork in the hole for the bees to sit on. Boardman feeders were not well liked, although some still use them. They are the mason jar feeders that sit at a hive entrance. It's believed that they encourage robbing, and while we've had some in our local hives, we got away from them because you had to fill them all the time, and it just wasn't convenient for us. It always seemed, too, that we were to the point of robbing, feeding yellow jackets and other critters, and you know, just one of those things that we got away with. We switched to one that holds a lot of liquid and was easily accessible, I should say. We use the, I think they're Man Lake feeders. They hold about 1.5 gallons. Some people think they're messy and provide difficulties for inspection, but I guess each his own. One club member talked about getting American fowl brood and the process by which they dispatched their equipment to ensure that the infective hive didn't contaminate the other hives. In short, it was all woodenware. They dug a hole, burned everything to ash, and buried it. Some questions came up about what if you had plastic foundation in your hives. Consensus was you obviously don't want to be burning plastic, and you have to make alternate plans to dispose of those properly. A lot of places have trash to steam incinerators that you can use. You just have to do your diligence to get rid of that. But if it's American fowl brood, you want to ensure you get rid of the spores, because they can wreak havoc on all your hives and others' hives. If you haven't taken care of them properly, you put them in the trash and they could contaminate conceivably somebody else's stuff. So need to take care of that when that comes through. American fowl brood, the description always is if you take a toothpick and you stick it in the cell and you pull it out and it comes out with something that looks, sorry for the description, like snot, you probably have an American fowl brood problem. Along those lines of discussing the spores and contamination, whatever, everybody at the meeting was offered a pair of nitrile gloves. Traditionally, beekeepers wear canvas leather gloves, maybe even gloves that they get from a big box store. A lot of preferences out there, but many are turning to these nitrile style gloves that one might wear in a medical setting. The gloves offer more dexterity. They're disposable, so if they get contaminated, you get rid of them and don't just keep contaminating your hives. And the other thing is, people claim you can't get stung through them. So I know that folks have been stung through them, but I don't know. It sounds like an interesting thing to try out. The gloves offer more dexterity, but what I found is the gloves they gave me actually fit my hands. You know, my problem is I have big hands, and most gloves are often torn before I even start working. As a former EMT and firefighter, I could never find those that fit, but I'm going to do a little more digging on their use because it was pretty interesting. I'm not sure what Charlie does, but he was talking about these, and he seems to be knowledgeable about chemicals, and he went as far as demonstrating how to remove the gloves for proper disposal. Maybe it's hard to describe versus witness firsthand, but let me give you a try. I think I'll be able to paint a picture for you. So, had the glove on his right hand, held his hand up, and from the bottom he bunched the glove up, but turned it inside out until it came a ball at his fingertips. He took his left hand and he captured the ball inside of his palm of his hand, and then he rolled the other glove up around the ball glove in his hand until it was inside out, and then you take those and you discard them. Get the picture? Yeah, not that complicated. Hopefully that makes sense. So maybe it's getting to be overkill, getting to this much detail, but something else came up about safety wear that I never considered. You know, being a beekeeper sometimes involves working with chemicals. While we personally, at our hive, try to refrain from using chemical treatments, sometimes they're just a necessary evil. The directions almost always tell you to wear safety goggles. I can't tell you the last time I did something where I thought there was even a slightest chance that I'd get something in my eyes. Stupid to say, and I'm well aware that I'm recording this, but if you're working with a container of chemicals and you're going to put it in a hive, really the chances of it bouncing out and hitting you in the face, for example, are, you know, pretty much nil. So what did I learn? Well, it was pointed out that safety glasses are more to keep you from rubbing your eyes than splash protection. Brilliant. That's all I have to say. Brilliant. Maybe I'm slow to catch on, but I never really considered that. If you go to rub your eye and you have glasses, perhaps you'll think twice about washing your hands before you do that. It just prevents that barrier from doing something that's so common. You're out there, you're hot, you're sweaty, you're wearing your stuff, and you keep wiping your face. It's funny what you pick up on unexpected times. And I've been through hazmat training for firefighting, EMT training, work training on chemicals, and no one ever explained it to me in that way. Maybe this is obvious to most or to you, but it just goes to illustrate that there's always something to be learned in these meetings. While there were certainly more topics discussed, I guess I'll share one more thing and close out this segment. Roger Gares, one of our guru guys who's always toying around with something. He has top bar hives and stuff. He was on hand and showed us some drone brood frames that he made in his workshop. For those not familiar with the concept, drone brood cells are more attractive to varroa mites, and the mites will enter these bigger cells 1 to 2 days before it's capped. They also like those because the incubation period for a drone is a little bit longer. It gives them more time to be in there. The frames that Roger previewed had a starter foundation strip about 3 to 4 inches down from the top, but then they have a bar with a bead on the bottom that will encourage the bees to build a comb from there to the bottom lower half of the frame. And specifically, it will encourage them to build drone brood cells. The way that these work is that you put them in the center of your brood nest, say 4 frames in an attained frame hide, and the bees will build out brood cells. The beekeeper, once the cells are full, will take these frames out, cut out the drone brood and drone, I don't know why I can't say that at the moment, drone brood and discard it. You may be familiar with another similar technique that's been demonstrated in some events that I've been to and read about in Bee Culture magazine and things like that, where beekeepers are using the Pureco green hard plastic frames. They're built with a foundation that has a bigger cell, and it encourages the bees to build the drone brood there. Beekeepers will put these in their hives, and then they'll freeze the frames to kill the drone brood and the mites, and then they'll put them back in the hive, and the bees will clean up the dead mites and the dead drone and use them over again. Haven't tried that, but I did, being adventurous, purchase 2 of the frames that Roger created, and willing to give it a try in one of the hives when we get going this year. You know, it seems kind of I'll stop and say, it seems kind of an odd concept about cutting bees out and discarding them. Somewhat counterintuitive, as if nature wanted this to happen, it would happen, but nature didn't intend for us to be harvesting bees in a box either. So in this case, I think the experimentation is worth a try, as I believe about knowing all non-chemical integrated pest management options. As you said before, just not too thrilled about putting chemicals in there. It affects the bees, it gets into the comb, And it doesn't go away. It builds up. And I think part of the problem we're into this colony collapse disorder is just the pesticides out in the world and whatever, more chemicals specifically introduced by the beekeeper. Maybe that's just not the right way to do it. But again, go back to this always, to each their own. Beekeeping, an interesting hobby steeped in tradition, but seems to always be evolving, especially in light of the colony collapse disorder microcosm that's generated so much interest in the community, in the public eye. I opened the segment with a clip of the package installation. That was the second half activity for our spring meeting. I think I'll hold off until the next episode to talk about what took place there. It's time to take a short break. Up next, let's get to the chat about our beginnings in beekeeping. Welcome back to the Beekeeper's Corner. Next up on the podcast, we're going to circle back and bring you that interview from last year with my wife, Sharon, about how we got our start in beekeeping. Hey, Sharon, how are you today?
Great. How are you doing?
Welcome to the podcast land. Going to have fun here recording the Beekeeper's Corner, and I thought it only right the first episode that you and I get to chat about how we get started in bees. That sound good with you?
Awesome.
All right, so last year, about this time, you came to me and said you wanted to get into beekeeping. It was a little earlier than this. We're recording this at the end of May, but you went to go take the class for Rutgers. Tell me a little bit about that. When did you take the class?
It was April 2008.
And it was in Bordentown, right?
Yes, at the Rutgers Extension Center.
And we were chatting a little earlier about this. How did you find out about the class? It was in the local newspaper, right?
Yes, I saw it in the Hunterdon County Democrat.
So you got in at an interesting time because the class itself was kind of being offered by the state in order to bring more beekeepers into the state. Was that not what happened when you started this?
That's right. The state has been looking for hobbyist beekeepers in order to keep the bee populations going since the colony collapse disorder.
And so when you got started with this, as I recall, there was a grant with this one, which I don't think they're not offering that now, right?
I'm not sure. I heard that they had stopped, but maybe they had started back up again. I'm not real sure about that.
So let's talk about the class. You went to Bordentown. It was an all-day class?
Yeah, it was pretty much 9 to 3 or 9 to 5, something like that.
Was it? It was a three-day class, Friday, Saturday, Sunday?
I think it was Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, half a day Saturday.
And so when you went there, you didn't have anything, because obviously we weren't beekeepers, and you went down there and got started. Tell me a little bit about what happened each day and who was involved and things like that. If somebody didn't go attend the class, tell them what they might expect going to the Rutgers classes.
The class was taught by the state apiary man. His name is Tim Schuller, and Bob Hughes. He also helped out teaching the class. They taught a little bit about everything to do with beekeeping. The hives, building the hives, the bees, what they look like, the queen, the drones, the worker bees, diseases that they can get.
And when you were down there, you actually built out hives and loaded hives and did a lot of hands-on stuff, right?
That's right. There was a lot of hands-on. In the afternoons, we went outside and they had brought a couple hives over, and we opened them up and looked inside and checked everything out, looked for mites, looked for the queen. They showed us everything inside the inside on the frames.
That sounds cool. Did you feel armed, ready to go when you got back? I know you seemed pretty excited, and I think given a year later, I think we did pretty good with what they taught us.
Yeah, our bees survived. They made it through, and they're doing well.
So one of the things that came out of that is when you took the class, we joined the New Jersey Beekeepers Association, and in particular the Northwest Beekeepers Association. And that worked out pretty good, too, because as you came out of the class, it gave us a lot of resources that we could tap into.
Yes.
It's funny to do an interview. See, I do this kind of stuff. And
if I was a talker like you, it would be no problem for me, too.
All right. So, Smarty, let's talk about you came home full of vim and vigor. When did you go get all the hardware and all that? You ordered it through the mail and it just showed up and we started building it. How did that work?
Yeah, there were some a few state approved sites that you could go to buy to get your equipment from for the grant that we got. And one of them was Stan Wazitowski, and he happens to live nearby, just a few miles away. So we bought all the hives boxes and everything from him, came home and we put them together and painted them and got the frames ready. The bees came from the south, Georgia, I believe, and they came on a different day. We had to go back down to Bordentown to pick them up, bring them home and put them in. It was a nuke, so it came with four or five frames with the queen and already some brood and some honey frames, and we put them right into our hive box and they were ready to go.
And you and I, we prepared a site, and we put the hive box out there, and we loaded everything up, and everything went relatively without a hitch. I can't say that we didn't get stung, but, you know, for the most part, it worked out pretty good, and we got through the summer. I don't know. I vaguely remember feeling a little bit odd about, but I didn't go take the class you did, about what we were doing. But you seem pretty confident by the 3 days training and the fact that you had other people to talk to, especially with Stan nearby. It was helpful, right?
Yeah, Stan was a big help, a good mentor. And since I know his family, daughter-in-law, and their kids, his grandkids, they were helpful to us also.
So, you know, we got started in this, you and I, from your Rutgers class, but in truth, your mom, who lived on the property that we live on, she had bees, and I remember coming over here to the house before we bought the home, tending to the bees. Your mom was part of the Beekeepers Association and all that also, right?
That's right. She had always been interested in beekeeping. She's a naturalist, I guess. She learns self-taught about everything she can about nature and the outdoors, and she just got into beekeeping and learned about it on her own and through other people, neighbors that were beekeepers. And she had a couple tries at it. Got some honey, but her hives colonies didn't last too long. They died out.
Yeah, I remember coming over and helping her insert some bees, maybe. I think that's what I recall doing that one time, and I just followed her instructions, and she seemed pretty adept at it. And we got some equipment out of it. Some of the stuff, obviously, when she lost the bees, we aren't going to use it again, but that was pretty cool and gave us a little bit of a taste of what we were in for. So it's been awesome chatting with you. I'm glad you got us involved in this, and you know, I'm having a lot of fun. I'm sure you are too. We could share this common interest with our kids, and they participate in some respects. So good deal getting us involved in this. Anything you want to say before we close this part of the episode out?
No, other than the honey is the best honey in the world. Liquid gold.
There you go. Thanks. I appreciate you talking with us. I'll take it from here.
As I was standing right outside your door, guessing I was skipping out, didn't want to talk it out. I was really shaken up to think that I could step outside your grace. Seemed that I was walking out. Now, but I can never turn back time.
Love the chats with my wife. As you can tell, she gives me no quarter, but we are partners through and through in everything that we do. She alluded to my penchant for talking. What she was referring to was my other hobby, which is working as an announcer for another endeavor, internet-based racing broadcasts. Throughout the year, I get to cover online live internet racing broadcasts, sometimes several nights a week, and sometimes it's here and there. Like this, I have a blast doing the live calls, and if you want to check that out, you can find a schedule to listen to some of the live broadcasts or catch up on some of the archived broadcasts at www.rlmtv.com. It's time to close this episode down, but before we go, let me bring out a feature that I plan to bring on occasion, and that is the term of the day. The term for this episode is super, as in honey super. When I first started beekeeping, I mistakenly thought that the bigger hive boxes that made up the hive body was a super, as in super in size. Sometimes that I get the impression that some beekeepers may use the term super interchangeably for any hive box, or at least that's what it sounds like in conversation. The term super really refers to a hive box used for the storage of surplus honey, which the beekeeper will harvest. Normally, it's placed over or above the brood chamber, although some beekeepers will exercise the option to put the supers between the bottom hive boxes. Typically, they don't do that too much because it requires you to take a box off to get in there. But supers come in four general sizes: shallow, medium, deep, and in a comb configuration. Maybe the deep is where the confusion comes in, as it sounds like a deep is the same thing as a regular hive box. Hobby beekeepers often choose the shallow size super because once loaded with honey, a super can get fairly heavy. A deep, fully loaded with honey, could be 70, 80 pounds. A medium, 35. A shallow, more manageable at about 30 pounds. I guess each his own. If you have a suggestion for the term of the day that you'd like to see featured on the Beekeeper's Corner podcast, send me a note to kevin@bkcorner.org. Be sure to tell us who you are and where you're writing from. It would also be helpful if you could share how to pronounce your name so we can make sure we get it right. Switching gears, next week I'll bring a little more information from our Beekeepers Association activity this past week and bring in a few topics. If you happen to be in the New Jersey area and would like to become a part of our association, the website is http://nwba.njbeekeepers.org. Of course, if you're listening from someplace other than our corner of New Jersey, well, there's a Beekeepers Association somewhere out there for you, and highly recommend that you get engaged with those folks. Plenty of resources and information. To find a link to a resource near you, you could visit the NewJerseyBeekeepers.org website. The New Jersey Beekeepers Association site has a links page that provides links to an association for just about any state in the nation, and certainly could probably find some international resources too if you're listening from somewhere other than the U.S. And that's all for this episode. Take a moment to let you know our opening music is from one of my favorites, Huey Lewis in the News. The song is titled Your Love is Killing Me. It's an unreleased tune from the band that was dug out from a 1995 rehearsal, and they shared it with the fans. Hopefully Huey and the boys won't mind us giving it a spin. The song is available as a free download from the fan site at www.hln.org, and you could support the band there by buying some merchandise and or getting some tickets. A highly recommended great band to see live, and certainly a great catalog. And maybe we'll make that our theme song through here. Songs also featured in this episode with a smooth, groovy undertone were George Rabb, that's H-R-A-B. The song is The Assumption. Jeff Eaton's Outside Your Door, and Jax with Grant Run. And last but not least, the song to close us out is Dark Horse performing Summer Dreaming. Time to sign off for this episode's questions, comments, and anything beekeeping related can find its way to us via our website at www.bkcorner.org. You can also send me an email to kevin@bkcorner.org. Thanks for listening, and we look forward to catching you next time on the Beekeeper's Corner.
Dreaming of a summer's day, wishing this rain came away. Thinking how nice it could be if you were on that beach with me, lazing on those summer sands, lying there just holding hands. Then I think just like that beach, you were there right out of reach. Had to go, you could have stayed. Said you were tired, but that's okay. Left me dreaming on a summer day. Summer day. Wishing I had said to you.